Welcome back. It is Canucks Talk slash, I guess, classical music. Your classical music stop here on Sportsnet 650 with more Beethoven for you coming back here. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, we're broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Jampro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, Jampro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. All right, final segment here on a Wednesday. We did the crossover to start the show, so right now let's go to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 9th. And the headline is, well, the Canucks make NHL history last night in Dallas, becoming the first team ever to come back from a 3-goal deficit in the final minute of regulation and go on to win. They win 6-5 in overtime, thanks to Kiefer Sherwood's overtime goal. A truly out of nowhere, stunning, baffling, incredible memory to have from this otherwise extraordinarily disappointing season. But yes, it did happen. And again, I don't, it's like there's no big picture spin to put on this other than it confirms what we've been talking about for a while, right? That you can never truly count this team out in these types of moments. We've seen it, as much as they're frustrating in many other moments. But there's worse ways to go out. I'll say that, right? Like I said, they're in side quest mode earlier in the show after doing the 5 quick goals against the Ducks. It's just like, what other
side quest mode? Yeah. It's like, so they're approaching a villager who's
the main quest has failed. It's you're like, okay, well, that's over.
Yeah, yeah. You're approaching the villager and they're like, will you please help me find my long lost sister?
Yeah.
And you're like, sure, where are they? And they're like, they're in the deep dark forest. And it's like, okay, sure, I'll happily do that. And
then I've never met you before, but here
then,
I go.
And then it's like, are you going to come with me? Like, no, I'm just going to stand here pacing and looking forlorn.
No, that's why you're the hero, because they're too scared to go find their sister. They need you to do it for them.
Thank you, random stranger.
And then they give you like a bottle of milk in return. And you're like, yeah.
And then you return, they give you a bottle of milk and say, you've made NHL history.
So that's what the Canucks are doing right now. And who knows what side quest will be next
that
they'll knock off. They'll record some team or league mark. Who knows?
What's the most esoteric record?
Well, we're going to find out, because none of these have been on our radar.
No, that's true.
So it's going to be completely out of the blue. They said a bunch last night, right? Apparently, according to Sean McIndoe, at The Athletic, first team ever to be down 2, pull the goalie, give up a goal to go down 3, and still win the game. Never happened.
Wow.
Never happened before in the NHL. So a lot of unprecedented stuff went down in Vegas last night.
And, well, Dallas. And
that's what I meant. Nevertheless.
The Vegas of Texas.
Yeah.
And Pew Suter now 1 goal away from getting to 25,
yep.
Right? Which would be a nice little ka-ching milestone for the dude. And Kiefer Sherwood, who got the game winner in overtime, is now 2 away.
From 20.
From 20, which would also be an incredibly cool milestone for him. And Atu Ratu now has, what, 5 goals in his last 7 games?
Mm-hmm.
Played really well, I thought, last night.
I thought also you saw... I know he had a tough night in the faceoff circle overall, but
he had some big wins.
He had some big wins. And even you could see Rick Tocchet using him as a tactical weapon. The goal when they're down 5-4 and they take the faceoff at center and he wins it and immediately bolts to the bench. Right. And it's like, OK, you have that piece that you can use, that you can throw out there in those situations at a young age, who at least is developing into that type of piece. So you saw like the kind of the tactical flexibility that Atu Ratu can give you in the lineup, I thought, last night too.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed. I you know, the speed is problematic still. There's work to be done there, but I'm very impressed by Atu Ratu and what he's shown us across this season. You know, there's a player there. And I do wonder, like, the Canucks have this very regimented way of handling their second contract non-established NHL players, right? One-way deal, like 850-ish K, maybe you go to 950 K for a center who produced as well as Ratu at the NHL level this season. And, you know, you sort of get paid later, right? They did it with Nils Höglander, and they really sort of established that precedent that if you hang and deliver on this deal, we'll extend you early, right? They're really basically building like a player development pathway, which also includes a commitment from the team that you will be rewarded, and you might be rewarded early, as Höglander was, if you know that you make good on this 2-year deal. But we've also seen them do and take this path with guys who haven't hit. Jack Rathbone, Vasily Podkolzin was on one of these types of contracts when he was traded. Akito Hirose, Artur Shilovs, right? So this is sort of a way of doing business that the club has clearly been thoughtful and disciplined about carving out. And yet in a world where the cap is going up significantly, I do wonder if Ratu's the sort of guy you might want to consider deviating off of it.
So
for
trying to go maybe a little with a little bit of term here.
Yeah, like 6 years, 3.5 probably upsets your internal. Like, it's not ideal for him to be making more than Dakota Joshua and Nils Höglander from an internal team dynamic perspective, and I'm sure the club will weight that heavily. But I do think that the rewards in a higher cap environment are going to be accrued by those teams that are willing to bet early.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's just you're dealing with such a limited amount of cap flexibility already, and then you're eating like another $2.5 million plus into that if you do that deal.
Yeah, you are.
Which doesn't mean you don't do it. I just think your evaluation of Ratu has to be like really high to do that.
See, I don't think it does, because
I agree with you in a vacuum, but in the Canucks position specifically because of the opportunity cost.
Well, for
you
sure.
That's what I'm talking about.
I would assume that if they're remaking this team that we're going to see them shed some money anyway.
Sure.
And
so it'll be more than the $14 million we're looking at or whatever. Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, they did that even last offseason with Mikheyev and on, right? I mean, they've
already started with Susie.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I sort of look at this and think, Ratu's the sort of guy, like, again, the way to think about it is, you know, if Pugh Suter is going to be a $4 million player, right?
Yep.
If you know, the next time you find Teddy Bluger in unrestricted free agency in a $115 million cap universe, right, that might be a $3 million contract, right? So why not get ahead of it with a guy who, you know, I think has some upside, but also has this pretty safe floor where even if he misses, you're feeling pretty good about him as, you know, a third line winger or a fourth line center going forward.
A bottom six contributor in some way, of some description.
At some point, these are the risks I do think that teams have to get, like, wrap their head around being willing to take going forward.
Yeah, and the question is, are the Canucks in a position where they feel like they can take that risk and it doesn't jeopardize the other things they're trying to do of kind of greater right now significance for the team? But this is also the bind that constantly trying to impress superstar X in the near term puts you in, right? Because it makes you think that you can't do these sorts of long-term risks. I think it even ties into the what we were debating with Rick earlier in the show, right? Where it's like, well, you can't lose Brock Besser. And I get that. You're like, we're trying to impress Quinn Hughes. We can't just let Brock Besser walk. But what ends up happening is you never take those risks. You never take those bold moves. And then,
meanwhile, the teams that are better positioned will keep taking them.
Yeah. You're not going to bottom out, but you're not going to raise your ceiling either. And that ultimately is what the Canucks need to find a way to do, is raise their ceiling significantly. Can placing a bet like that on Ratu Ratu help potentially down the road if he grows into some of the potential we're seeing from him right now? So the other part of that headline, of course, is that not only did they set or did they make NHL history, but they did it, and at least temporarily, at least for 24 hours or so, avoided being officially eliminated from Stanley Cup playoff contention. Now, that is pending the results of the Minnesota Wild game tonight. We can get into this in just a second in the
And a lot of people think it's also pending the St. Louis Blues game, but
we'll
I don't
go
think
over
it is.
This. The other thing I wanted to mention in headlines before we move on with the rest of the whiteboard is Dakota Joshua, the PHWA nominee of the Vancouver chapter, the PHWA nominee for the Bill Masterton Trophy, awarded annually to the NHL player who best exemplifies perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to the game. And of course, Dakota Joshua, diagnosed with testicular cancer in the offseason, coming back to play, playing a lot of games as well. And, you know, we all know he hasn't found his form again, but just the fact that he is on the ice, has been on the ice for so much of the season, in the fight, competing with his team, no surprise here, a very deserving nominee for the Masterton Trophy for the Canucks this year.
And he also sustained an additional injury in midseason and was able to, you know, come back from that. So it's been a trying season for Dakota Joshua without question. In terms of how the sausage gets made here as a member of the PHWA, we submit three candidates ranked 1, 2, 3 on our ballot. Mm-hmm. And I will say I thought this was a year where it was especially difficult. Like, I thought in a normal year where you didn't have, you know, as many guys overcoming such significant injuries or significant personal loss, like Quinn Hughes for me would have been a really strong candidate given, you know, what he's dealt with to play through some of these injuries, the way that he's carried this team. But he didn't even make my top three. You know, you had Derek Forbert, who missed games earlier in the season following the death of his father. You had Thatcher Demko and everything that he overcame over the course of the year, multiple injuries, three extended absences for injury-related reasons, including an unprecedented knee tear. I mean, this team dealt with an awful lot over the course of the season, and more than anything, filling out that Masterton ballot was really a reminder of just how much, you know, even away from the game and off the ice, this team has sort of had to manage and work through.
So those are your headlines. Again, congratulations to Dakota Joshua being the Masterton Trophy nominee as selected by the Vancouver chapter of the PHWA, which Chance just said. Of course, he is a member of Broadsheet for the Whiteboard today. Nothing too much to add in here. I did just the only Canucks-related note from Friedman's 32 Thoughts written column today was basically said, look, not sure what's going to happen with Rick Tocchet, but people around the league are maybe looking at this and saying, you know what, maybe we won't do a one-sided option on a coaching deal, or at least a team option on a coaching deal like this, because we don't want to create this type of circumstance. Now, I can understand that. It feels like a little bit of a, I don't know, it doesn't have to be a big deal. Like, he could still easily sign a long-term extension to stay here, but maybe a little bit of an awkward situation it's created between the Canucks and Rick Tocchet. I also think it just had to be such a perfect storm of things happening to make this option year of the team kind of awkward. You know what I mean? Like, he had to, one, win the Jack Adams last year and have so many things go right for the team. And then there had to be this kind of sense of frustration and the team falling short and all this crazy drama going on. You know what I mean? Like, there had to be so many events had to line up in sequence to get to the place where we're talking about this.
Yeah. And also the team, you know, I think Rutherford is uniquely unmoved by the idea of having a coach work out their contract.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because the easiest way to avoid this, if you were to do this type of deal as another team, is to just get the extension done coming off the Jack Adams award.
Mm-hmm.
And the Canucks didn't. So,
which is what most teams would do.
Yeah. I mean, option years are odd anyway. Just sign the deal. Just sign a deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wonder, like, the Canucks have paid a lot of coaches over the years, right? I mean, Travis Green had 1.5 seasons left on his deal when he was dismissed. John Tortorella signed, I mean, you'd have to look it up, but it was a 4 or 5 year deal, and he worked one of those seasons. Mike Gillis, at the exact same, on the exact same timeline, signed a 5 year deal and was also gone after that first season, right? So there was like a long stretch in there where the organization was paying both a GM and coach who were not working for them, while also paying a president in Trevor Linden and a head coach in Willie DeJardin and a GM in Jim Benning. So I think I think that history probably colors why the Canucks do these options in the first place, but I don't think they should, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, as I said,
Keep it simple. Like, what? These are non-cap dollars. It's not like a player where you front load their deal and then they like increase their trade value as their cap hit becomes high. You know, like, there's no benefit to the organization.
No. Well, the benefit is theoretically you save some money, but that's it. The price of that benefit is that inherently, if you have a 1 year option and you're picking it up to save money, you also have a lame duck coach.
Right.
Now, if you're Jim Rutherford, you don't mind that too much, but most organizations do mind that.
Well, and also, in what market is it more important to manage the conversation around the team than this one? You know, I mean, on the one hand, people like to, you know, take shots at the idea of like Vancouver, it's such a fishbowl, like it's a hard place to play. And it's not unfair, even if sort of, I think, you know, it's worth sort of educating players on the benefits of that too, right? I think it's an overstated talking point among fans who are frustrated, but I do think it's a real thing that has to be managed. And I do think it's in the organization's interest to like minimize where possible the sort of flapping of gums or the clucking of hens. Right?
Yep.
And option years, just whether it was the LaFleur Bruce Boudreau a couple of years back or this one, obviously just give us an opportunity to, you know,
to talk about it, to get into it.
I was going to say like kick a horse or something, but
are
like,
we the gums or the hens?
we're the
clucking
hens.
Yes.
But also our gums flap.
Our gums are flapping.
And our wings, because we're hens.
Our wings are flapping ineffectually. They're flapping, but they're not doing anything.
The bingo wings.
Lineup notes. Day off. Well, travel day today. They play Colorado tomorrow in Colorado. So another tough road game for the Canucks. And of course, the other thing I wanted to mention here.
Will that game matter?
We'll see. Tom Volander plays tomorrow against Penn State in the semifinals of the Frozen Four at 5:30 Pacific time. They lose that game, his season's over. So all of a sudden, the Tom Volander conversation could kick into high gear again. Playoff and standings update. Yes, the Canucks are technically still alive. But as you were alluding to, I have seen some people say they'll be eliminated tonight if both Minnesota wins and St. Louis picks up a point. I think St. Louis is done. Yes, the Canucks can get to 93, and theoretically they could match St. Louis in regulation wins as well, which is the first tiebreaker. But the second tiebreaker is regulation and overtime wins, so i.e. all wins other than by shootout, and they can't catch St. Louis in that category. So I don't think it's possible for them, even theoretically, to catch St. Louis. I think the Canucks are officially done if Minnesota beats San Jose tonight. And yes, they're playing San Jose at home, and they're getting Kirill Kaprizov and Joel Eriksson-Ek back officially now from the team. So a pretty daunting prospect for the Canucks there. The other thing I'll say is there's not a lot at stake even in terms of draft position now. If you look at the league standings, like, it's really the only teams that the Canucks should be concerned about, or Canucks fans, I should say, even from a draft position standpoint, are Calgary and Utah. But they're going to finish in that mix with those three teams. The also-rans in the East aren't catching them. Nobody in the West is catching them. So there's only so far they can drop, and so far they can rise. So I think Josh Elliott Wolf was saying on Canucks Brunch, it's like 14, 15, or 16. That's where the Canucks are going to pick this year, and there's very little difference between picking in those spots.
They're going to win the lottery.
That's right. So even then, it doesn't really matter too much what happens in the standings from here on out.
Well, and I mean, yeah. So, and also in this draft class, it doesn't matter that much too, to sort of add to it. I would note the Flames play the Ducks and the Sharks still on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
The Utah Hockey Club plays Nashville twice on the way out. Vancouver, not quite so lucky, right? They play the Sharks.
They do have the Sharks, yeah.
But there are their other games, Vegas, Minnesota, and
Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Tough.
Tough.
So, yeah, wouldn't shock me, actually, if both teams finish ahead of Vancouver. We'll see. Not that it matters. Odds. So I'm seeing a lot of talk that the Canucks the Canucks will only be eliminated if St. Louis picks up a point.
I just covered this.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We're on the same page. Sorry. I dozed off.
It's all right.
Yeah. So the Minnesota Wild are -350 favorites tonight.
That's pretty heavy.
+275. You know what though?
That's good steam on San Jose.
There you go. Hey, look. I'm telling you what, the Canucks money line was off the board at 5-2 last night. Like, it was off the board. You couldn't even bet it.
It's because Vegas knew they were coming back. Yeah, they're scared. Like, we don't want the exposure on this.
Yeah, now Vegas knew. This team can't be killed. We can't.
Take it off the board. Take it off the board.
Oh, my God.
sell.
So that's your gambling update. The implied probability of the Canucks being eliminated tonight is very high. It is, in fact, 78%.
So there you go. We will see if the Canucks remain technically alive tomorrow after Minnesota plays their game against San Jose. But whether the Canucks are alive or
not. Love to be technically alive.
Will be alive.
Dom just said in my ear that feels low. It's a hockey game, man.
Yeah.
I get that.
The Sharks,
San Jose.
The Sharks could score 3 goals off Tyler Toffoli's posterior.
I think Tyler Toffoli's out, actually. So add another factor there.
Off Fabian Zetterlund's posterior. Zetterlund's been traded to Ottawa.
Like, dang it,
off
Mikhail
Granlund's Tuchus. Oh, wait. Yeah, okay.
Jan Ruda, step up. It's your time to shine, buddy.
Deflects in off Jan's Ruda. All right.
All right, there we go. That's the show. We'll be back tomorrow for more Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.